Washington Week. I'm Neil Strauser, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network.
I have decided to retire from Congress at the end of the present session. My decision is irreversible.
Thus did House Speaker Carl Albert this week become the third of the four top leaders of Congress to announce he is stepping down, following the majority and minority leaders of the Senate, Mike Mansfield and Hugh Scott. Albert said he had decided long ago he would not serve beyond his 70th year. That would have been another term away.
I'm now 68 years old, in good health, and there are other things I want to do while I'm young enough to do them. I want to spend more time with my family and lifelong friends. I want to be close to them because I love them dearly. I shall return to the scenes of my childhood in Oklahoma and live in the community where I grew up.
Back to Bug Tussle, where as a child, said Albert, he had dreamed of becoming Speaker of the House. Earlier in the week, he had vigorously denied he would consider leaving because of the frustrations of the speakership. There was frustration, some on the part of younger Democrats with Albert, who felt him less than vigorous in molding the unwieldy Democratic majority into a force. And there was the latest frustration, which saw Albert's own beloved institution, the House, under attack, as a result of Wayne Hayes hiring an admitted mistress as a House committee clerk. Most specifically, it was the controlling Democratic majority of the House in danger of being discredited in an election year. It seemed no accident that Albert's heir apparent, Majority Leader Thomas O'Neill, moved in very strongly this week and accomplished half his purpose, getting Hayes to step aside as chairman of the Democratic Campaign Committee. It was one down and one to go, as Bernard Shaw reports.
Wayne Hayes returned to his home district in Ohio this weekend, minus one committee chairmanship, but clinging to his more powerful position in the House Administration Committee. The sex scandal has become a political issue, with President Ford saying in 1971 he warned against giving the Hayes Administration Committee widespread authority, saying it will never be retrieved until there's a scandal. House Majority Leader Thomas O'Neill accused the president of bringing low and cheap politics into the issue, of taking a cheap political shot. O'Neill said the Elizabeth Ray incident has nothing to do with the committee that has helped modernize congressional operations. House Democrats say if Hayes doesn't give up his chairmanship until all charges are resolved, the party caucus will strip him of his power. O'Neill thinks Hayes will stand aside.
Well, I would anticipate that Mr. Hayes would return to Washington on Wednesday after his election. And at that particular time, I would expect that he would step down as chairman of the committee and that a new committee chairman would be elected.
With the Justice Department, a federal grand jury, and the House Ethics Committee investigating, Congressman Hayes says he's confident he'll be found innocent of Ms. Ray's charge that he put her on the public payroll solely for sex. Bernard Shaw, CBS News, Washington.
Timing tells much in politics. Senator Hubert Humphrey did not wait until after the final primaries next Tuesday before announcing this week he may very well become an active candidate for the Democratic nomination if Jimmy Carter does not emerge from Ohio, California, and New Jersey with a 12 or 1,300 delegate vote total. It remained to be seen whether Humphrey's indication would help hold Carter short. President Ford faced up to apparent reality this week. After winning Rhode Island but losing South Dakota and Montana this past week and expecting a net loss of delegates to Ronald Reagan next week, Mr. Ford conceded in somewhat indirect fashion in a Friday interview that he will not emerge from the primaries with a first ballot nomination assured.
We will go into the convention with nearly enough committed votes, and I think we can make some headway with the non-committed votes between now and then, and therefore I think we'll have a first ballot victory in Kansas City.
The period between the final primaries and the August convention thus becomes all important, and there were some eyebrows raised about the timing of the second in the series of Western Economic Summit conferences, which the president announced this week would take place in Puerto Rico in late June. Mr. Ford himself citing no urgent crisis.
In the past, world leaders have met to deal with crises. But today's complex problems require that leaders meet to avoid them.
The event would offer a high visibility 6 weeks before the convention. But any suggestion of politics was dismissed jointly by Secretary of State Kissinger and Treasury Secretary Simon.
We
do not believe that the cohesion of the industrialized democracies, the economic progress of their peoples, and their relation to other parts of the world is a partisan issue.
Naturally, people are going to say politics make the head of state look well, but I consider the charge of politics a poor substitute for thought.
There was summitry this week as Spain's new king paid a bicentennial visit to Washington to talk to the president and the Congress of democracy and other matters. Bernard Kalb reports.
The year 1492 has been re-celebrated these last few days. King Juan Carlos of Spain has been visiting, and there's been the inevitable remembrance of Christopher Columbus. President Ford joined in the tribute to the explorer who made the journey from the old world to the new. But 1976 is a bit more timely, 1976 and the years ahead. And the Spanish monarch was well received in his appearance before a joint meeting of Congress. Juan Carlos represents a Spain in transition from Franco to the future. His commitment to lead Spain from her authoritarian past into the democratic mainstream of Western Europe was just what Capitol Hill wanted to hear. Not that it will be an easy task. The authoritarian Franco legacy of 40 years is not instantly erasable. But Juan Carlos's monarchy is pointing in that direction of progressive reform, and his speech on the Hill helped firm up the expectation of a favorable vote on a new five-year treaty between the two countries. It allows U.S. forces to continue using military bases in Spain in return for $1.2 billion in aid and credits. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, Washington.
The year 1215 was also celebrated this week in ceremonies in the Capitol Rotunda. With royal guards in bearskin hats standing at attention, the bewigged and berobed Lord Chancellor Elwin Jones of Britain's House of Lords presented the temporary bicentennial gift of the oldest known copy of the Magna Carta and spoke solemnly of that ancient document's gift to democratic institutions. Less solemnly, the Lord Chancellor commented on even being there in the capital the British once burned.
Those not familiar with our ways have thought it a trifle paradoxical for the British to be joining in the celebrations of the bicentenary of what was, after all, the loss of the American colonies. They overlook our traditions of compromise. We, in fact, regard the events of two centuries ago as a victory for the English-speaking world.
And so, the Washington Week, produced by Tony Stroily. I'm Neil Strauser, CBS News.
The World This Week. I'm Steve Young, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The Teton Dam in southeast Idaho was built to hold back a reservoir 17 miles long, totaling more than 2,100 acres in surface area. It had been controversial from the start, environmentalists arguing that the construction site was situated near a fault in the earth and therefore potentially subject to earthquake activity. Saturday, the dam burst. Several hundred square miles of land are underwater. So far, just a handful of fatalities, but as the waters recede, the known death toll is likely to rise perhaps substantially. Idaho Governor Cecil Andrus was soon on the scene.
The dam failed and the waters came with high velocity and high volume instead of in a normal flood stage where they creep up and spill over the banks. And it hit two communities of the state in just total devastating manner.
Eyewitnesses said it all started with a 10-foot hole at the base of the earthen dam. Cameraman Paul Jenkins of KID-TV witnessed animals in mass panic.
We watched a herd of cattle who had been frightened and stampeded and were running directly into the water. And they ran into the wall of water, and that's the last we saw of them.
Most people, fortunately, had enough warning time to reach high ground. Reporter Mel Richardson of KID-TV was on the foothills outside the worst-hit town, Rexburg.
We watched the wall of water come into the city, and I watched a house floating down the channel. It went 1 mile in 3 minutes. We timed it. 1 mile in 3 minutes. A full brick house just floating right down the channel. And as this wall of water came in, it just, houses and things, you know, just collapsed in front of them.
Loss of human life, livestock, property damage in the millions all lead in the aftermath to unanswered questions for Idaho and the rest of the nation. Should dams be built near geological faults? Should they be earthen dams? And of special interest to seismologists, are dams sometimes the cause rather than the victim of earthquakes? Some experts theorize that the huge weight of water artificially penned in can cause weakened subterranean structures to collapse.
Syrian troops this week marched into Lebanon in an effort to bring peace between the warring Christian and Muslim factions who've been fighting for 14 months around the capital, Beirut. The probable outcome of that action assessed by CBS News correspondent John Sheehan.
There's certainly no guarantee that the Syrian intervention is going to bring about a stable ceasefire among the warring factions here. But even if it did, a ceasefire would leave Lebanon a long way from having solved its problems. Some way still has to be found to give Christians and Muslims an equal voice in government. And any negotiated end to the fighting would still leave this country bristling with weapons in the hands of the various private armies. Most of the gunmen who roam around here with everything from pistols to submachine guns to small artillery pieces seem to enjoy it. The gun is an obvious symbol of masculinity, and for most of these teenage warriors, it's as fascinating as a sports car. The war could end, but the Lebanese gunslinger might be harder to overcome. He could be as durable a figure as the American gunslinger after our own civil war. That's a problem for a country as small as Lebanon. It would be like taking the whole American Wild West and concentrating it in an area the size of Delaware. John Sheehan, CBS News, Beirut.
After meeting with U.N. Secretary General Kurt Waldheim, Secretary of State Henry Kissinger said the U.S. was not consulted in advance of the Syrian intervention, which it opposes. Britain, which loves its fish and chips primarily codfish, and Iceland, which has grown to hate British fishing ships, declared a truce of sorts this week, as Bob Dyke reports from London.
Government leaders in both London and Reykjavik praised the agreement, but some political opponents in both countries, as well as commercial fishermen, condemned the compromise. Leftists called it a sellout to NATO, and British trawlermen accused their government of caving in to Icelandic demands for fewer trawlers subject to tighter restrictions inside Iceland's self-declared 200-mile zone. But the British may be staking their own claim to a precedent. The common market of which Britain is a part is currently discussing the creation of its own 200-mile zone, and there are signs that the British may be thinking of demanding exclusive fishing rights within their share of the proposed limits. It is a claim that the British could not consider legitimately making if they were still pursuing a cod war with Iceland over that very same issue. Bob Dyke for CBS News, London.
Canada this week said that starting January 1st of next year, it will claim fishing jurisdiction out to 200 miles from its shores. The Canadian External Affairs Minister said the decision was made as a result of the extension of the U.S. fisheries jurisdiction in March of last year. What began in the dead of winter in New Hampshire will conclude this Tuesday in California, New Jersey, and Ohio, the 1976 presidential primary season. Correspondent Neil Strausser has the political scorecard.
For the Republicans, Super Tuesday looms as the 15th round of a heavyweight title bout. Both candidates have been shaken, but neither appears able to deliver the knockout punch before the fight goes to a decision. The judges in this bout will be the few hundred uncommitted delegates likely to hold the balance of power if, as expected, neither battler comes out of Ohio, New Jersey, and California with a convention majority. In the 14th round, Ronald Reagan scored the most points in the exchange over Montana, South Dakota, and Rhode Island, landing 2-1 for President Ford. But then the challenger himself slipped to the floor momentarily, as he admitted, with a hypothetical discussion of the possibility of sending some U.S. troops to Rhodesia. But then his handlers claimed low blow when the title holder's backers put on ads saying that Governor Reagan couldn't start a war, President Reagan could. In the Democratic ring, it's more like the final stage of a tag team wrestling match. Many of the contestants have been thrown out of the ring, but others keep coming at Jimmy Carter, who bested Morris Udall in South Dakota in the last round, but lost in Rhode Island and Montana to Jerry Brown and Frank Church, respectively. He could throw them out of the ring in Ohio and New Jersey next week. But if he doesn't, the referee, in the manner of pro wrestling scripts, is making motions of getting into the battle himself. His name is Hubert Humphrey. Neil Strausser, CBS News, Washington.
Humphrey, who has been lying relatively low, told CBS News correspondent Chris Kelly that right now Carter is more than 600 short of the total delegates needed to nominate. Humphrey said Carter might go to the Democratic National Convention with fewer than 1,200 delegates.
If, perchance, Mr. Carter should not do too well in these upcoming three primaries, that will mean that the convention is definitely an open convention. In other words, there'll be no first ballot victory for anybody. That obviously would lend itself to my looking more favorably upon some positive action on my part.
What do you mean by positive action, sir?
Well, of really looking for delegates, of becoming an active in seeking the nomination.
The Wayne Hayes controversy continues to simmer. The congressman, who has admitted having a personal relationship with Elizabeth Ray after putting her on the government payroll, partially acceded this week to mounting pressure from his Democratic colleagues.
Not wishing to have my name on a check which might be used by a political opponent as a campaign issue against some Democratic candidate, I have decided to call a meeting of the campaign committee for Wednesday, June the 9th, to ask that a temporary chairman be elected until a charge against me has been resolved. I have also decided to call a meeting of the Committee on House Administration next week to discuss with them any questions concerning my role as chairman of the House Administration Committee.
This week, Ms. Ray denied in an interview with Bernard Shaw a Chicago Tribune report saying she told investigators she was intimate with 13 congressmen, two senators, and White House photographer David Kennerly.
There are a lot of people, especially men in the Washington area, who are shaking in their boots, people who may have just had casual relations with you, and they're wondering where the next bomb is going to explode. How do you react to their fears? What would you say to the men you've known?
Well, have no fear, gentlemen. I will not do anything to hurt you.
Shaw reports that Kennerly, who is single, says he went out with Miss Ray once 2 years ago, and that was that. Graduation was held Wednesday at the United States Military Academy at West Point, and that was not that. The biggest cheating scandal in the point's history persists. The entire junior class has been held on post while an investigation continues. And that's The World This Week, produced by Phil Kierstead. This is Steve Young, CBS News.